The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
This is for you, this is for you and me, and who we see when we see each other. This is for all, this is for all the time you tried to find your sister or your brother. And you're not crazy anymore, you've been waiting at the door. And it's time to open.
You bet it's time to open. Oh my gosh, it's time to open. You are listening to Waking Up in America. We're a radio magazine with dynamic radio dialogues on life today in America, brought to you by Bragg, BRAGG.com, Happily 200, The Koning Company, DrVal.com, and Doctor is all spelled out, and 42action.org, and it's the number 42 and then action.org. Now, Bob Sercosta of the Home Shopping Network says we're doing radio that is changing the world, and we love your endorsement, Bob. If you hear a dog barking, a telephone ringing, or an angel singing, we call in from our homes and offices around the world to cause this program. Now, Jesus spoke in Aramaic, and in the Lord's Prayer, pray means to go out into the world and get that which is yours. And you always include a prayer for the celebration for the Republic, for the United States of America. And today we ask for the respect of our animal friends as well as for each other and our communities. We are a nation structured in Christian values, and guys, the Ten Commandments work, so let's just work them. Let's bow our heads in appreciation for the men and women who have died to protect our freedom and for all of those who work to forward freedom in this country. For those of you listeners in New Mexico, official information, we're moving to the 8 o'clock hour on the 3rd of September, so you get to sleep in an hour later, and so do I. I'm in California, so that'll be really interesting. Now, if you want to ask a question while we're on air, you can tweet Randy at R-A-N-D-I and then S-H-A-N-N-O-N, and you can ask her a question, and she'll put that on air. And you can please follow me on Twitter at Val Kirkgaard 1. So that's V-A-L-K-I-R-K-G-A-A-R-D, and then the number 1. So, when I talked about prayer in the first part here, the guest we have today is totally representational of what it means to have a prayer in action. Matthew Charles Cardinale, an activist, a law student, and an affordable housing advocate, is a really interesting person. He put in his bio that he was homeless at 14, and when you, I was telling him just before the show, I think you think of this poor little guy that's, you know, you make up whatever story you make up about why a person is homeless, but why this person was homeless was that he didn't want to be at home. He wanted to go someplace else, so he did. And he's been going someplace else and doing the things that he wants to do. You can hear him in the background there. His entire life. And so I want you to see what this guy that left home at 14 has put together for himself. Now, I came across Matthew through Eileen Proctor, who is a person that I respect greatly. She put on together a Great Minds series. She's a press agent, and she does... We were talking about her before the show, and so, Eileen, I hope your ears are burning. She always has top-ranked people. She's a fast responder, and if you need a press agent, Eileen Proctor is a person that will work her buns off for you. So I just have the greatest respect for the people that she's introduced me to and the speed and grace in which she does that. So, Eileen, you rock, and may you continue to rock on forever because we love you. So, Matthew, welcome to Waking Up in America. We're delighted to have you. And Randy, do you want to kick off anything? We've been chatting before the show, or you just want to see this guy unravel and tell us what Alex
is
Yeah,
he's so interesting. Just a good morning to Albuquerque, and so excited to be a part of their morning, and can't wait to be moved an hour later and draw in some new listeners. It's going to be very exciting. So, Albuquerque, yes.
Yeah, the better part, the best part of this, too, is that I can actually get people on the West Coast. When I tell them they have to be on the conference ridge at 5:45 in the morning, they go, "You're kidding," or "I don't know," or whatever. And I know it'll be better at 6:45. That's a realm that's almost in their world. So, Matthew, thank you for getting up early with us and doing what we're doing here.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the program with you.
Yeah. I think so, too. It's a fun thing. As soon as I saw what you had done to the name Alec, I'm going to just introduce you slowly to what you're up to our listeners. Let them know what Alec is, and then we'll find out more about Smart Alec.
About Smart Alec. Okay. So Alec, A-L-E-C, is the American Legislative Exchange Council. And in recent years, I think more and more people have become aware of their role in developing really harmful public policy that then gets put into a model form and replicated in state legislatures, Republican state legislatures across the country.
That's the funny thing right there. It's not
yeah,
just that they can do it once, but that they have the power to replicate it all over the place.
Over
most
and very quickly.
Nobody read it.
It's like a
right,
spreading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so things like voter ID laws, which many of them were actually struck down by federal courts in recent weeks, the restrictions on the types of ID that you can present for in-person voting. Also, stand your ground laws. Also, privatization of prisons, and it's kind of interesting. The Justice Department just said a couple days ago that they're not going to work with private prisons anymore. Well, CCA, the Corrections Corporation of America, one of Alec's biggest fans, and because they've been pushing a privatization agenda for prisons, privatization also for schools, so they're big behind anything related to vouchers, charter schools, privatization in any way, deregulation, lack of regulation, preempting regulation at the state level. So if a city wants to do something good for the environment, they're going to convince the state to pass a law saying that the city can't do it. Alec has really like a vast repertoire of bills that they keep putting out year after year, and many of them are almost verbatim getting introduced and passed.
Mm. What was their stand your ground, for example?
Well, the stand your ground was really changing the circumstances in which you could defend yourself and basically shoot first and not have an obligation to try to flee. Because in common law, the expectation is that you don't just shoot first if you reasonably can, get out of there and not harm the person. And so using the law to basically say no, if you're at home, someone's on your property, just shoot them, and it's people are, maybe quick to say, yeah, that's, great, don't come on my property, but it actually has played out, it actually played out in the Trayvon Martin case, and Stand Your Ground was, one of the reasons that Eric Zimmerman was able to, be absolved. But that's probably one of the more atypical Alec bills. They do some stuff that's around kind of red meat social issues, but their biggest thing is really about this libertarian philosophy of anti-regulation, and that's really
anti-regulation when all they're doing is regulating.
I'm sorry.
Well, you're saying they're anti-regulation, but it sounds like all they're doing is creating regulations.
Well, that's really deep, Valerie. I, you know, sometimes it takes a fresh pair of eyes to point out hypocrisy. You know, isn't that interesting to say that they're against regulation except when it benefits them? Okay.
Right, getting every single state is to back up what they're doing. They're totally after regulation. So.
Yeah. So
who's actually behind? Well, I want to know is who's behind the brothers.
Yeah, but behind Alec, the major funders are actually the Koch brothers, and so
They represent somebody.
Well,
represent
you know.
Point of view.
Yeah, I mean the Koch brothers, you know, have made their fortune from Georgia Pacific, and other industries, and have, but they have a political agenda, and it's really this free market, no regulation, capitalist agenda, and then you know they also have a lot of corporations that are in support of Alec, behind Alec, and kind of promoting this agenda as well, although there's been a divestment campaign, so a lot of corporations.
You were naming some of the corporations that are pulling out of Alec right now. One of them being AARP, and you mentioned some others.
Yeah, Expedia.com just within the last couple of weeks divested from Alec, and AARP had some kind of relationship with Alec that. You know, they got a lot of pressure to stop doing business with them. And they said, you know, we wanted to have a seat at the table. We felt like we had to be part of Alec to have a seat at the table, you know, to get these legislators' attention. So that's how, you know, that's how insidious it's become. And that's why, you know, have put together this progressive response to Alec called Smart Alec, where,
Listen, Mr. Smart Alec, who I've been all my life. I want to draw another analogy too. Okay, so here we have a smart Alec who left home at 14, and he went after Alec. Okay, and he's taken a look at Alec, and now smart Alec is actually being asked to cease and desist abusing the good name of Alec. So it's like, I love it. I love it. It's like you've been a smart Alec since you were 14, at least. Probably you started at 12, but it took 14 for you to smart your way out of the house and get going on this amazing destiny of yours, okay? So, Mr. Smart Alec, what have you got in store for us, and what's the possibility here? Because I know you're about affordable housing. You're about all kinds of stuff. I know you're in law school.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about Smart Alec. We have, in just a few months, gone from an idea to now a real organization with the board of directors with tax-exempt status. We are actively applying for grants. We had a first grant to just come in. And we are about really the empowerment of average citizens to reclaim their space in the democratic process, and that is really in the halls of government, city halls, county commissions, and also state legislatures. So it's a very ambitious project. You know, we're going to have to start kind of small and branch out. So I know we want to have a presence. We're headquartered actually in Portland, Oregon, and we want to have a presence in Salem, which is our state capital, when they reconvene in January, but we already have our first model bill, which is a draft bill that I wrote called Affordable Housing Impact Statements, which I hope we can talk about, and it was adopted unanimously in Atlanta in November of last year, and it quickly got introduced in a number of other cities, including New Orleans, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, and Albany. And actually,
wow.
just earlier this week, did the Planning Commission of the City of New Orleans issue their report in which they recommended adoption of affordable housing impact statements in the City of New Orleans as a way to really grapple with their housing crisis after Hurricane Katrina and make sure that they have good metrics to achieve their goals of, they actually have a goal of 7,500 new affordable housing units by 2021. And this is a way to make sure that they get there. And we, board secretary, Dr. DeWanda Farmer, who's one of the nation's few PhDs in community economic development, and I both flew out to New Orleans in June and met with the city. We've been communicating with the city, giving them a lot of information, which I actually saw made it into the report, which is exactly the kind of thing we want to do, empower people with the information so that they can use it, tailor it to their needs, and that's really happened. So we're totally thrilled about what's happening with New Orleans, and what we ultimately want to do is put together a national advisory board of people who have expertise in their city about housing and also environmental issues. And we actually have a mandate in our bylaws for one-third low-income participation. So we actually want low-income people and also homeless people, to the extent possible, to be at the center of our conversations around housing and the environment. And that actually means that we're going to be trying to identify and remove barriers to participation, because, of course,
I want to just step back a moment into something that you said, because I'm interested in mm-hmm. what's happening here, and I've been looking at housing. I've had my own little plans for housing, different groups of people. I've had fantasies of white vans driving around the city, picking people up off the streets, that kind of thing. And I've done a fair amount of work with the homeless, and one of the things that
right,
I've noticed
right.
is we don't just have housing to deal with when we're dealing with a lot of the homeless people. We're dealing with schizophrenia and all kinds of stuff as well. Is there anything in this plan of yours that includes somehow medical care or job training that goes with the housing, or is that something that you're not looking at this time?
Well, I think that there are a lot of homeless people whose situation may have been exacerbated by some of those mental health issues. But I also think that you might be coping okay until you become homeless, and that is, if you didn't have a mental health issue before, you might develop one on the streets. So
this is one of my friends years ago, Matthew. His name was Tane Bodkin, and he decided he wanted to experience what the people were experiencing in the streets of Los Angeles, and he went down
mm-hmm.
and did homeless for 3 days, and he said he almost didn't get out. So what you were saying about that affecting them is true. But
what you've got
also is a tremendous amount of alcoholism and things
mm-hmm.
of that nature
That's right.
that go on. And it's like, I don't know, I'm interested and I don't know how to separate it all out.
It's
the whole thing works together, because it's not just an issue of giving somebody a home. And I know you know that.
Have anything to do with, across the country they started passing that you couldn't even give food to the homeless? And up here... I'm in Miami, but in Fort Lauderdale, they were arresting people for it, and a judge finally put a halt to the law after a 90-year-old person was arrested for feeding the homeless, which is crazy.
Yeah, and a shout out to the Broward County Coalition for the Homeless and my friend Laura Hansen over there. That was quite outrageous, and criminalization of homelessness is really an ongoing issue. Cities,
oh, totally.
you know, they want to ban panhandling. They want to, oh, you know, you can't sit, or, you know, you can't sit, you can't, you know,
point.
A lot of these, yeah, a lot of these laws get struck down when they finally get challenged. And actually, the Justice Department issued a memo maybe a year ago where they said, you know, homeless people have like a constitutional right to sleep somewhere. So
yeah.
If it has to be a public park, you can't arrest them for that.
So. Does this have anything to do with, I mean, had you seen the story on Kelly Thomas, who was out in California? He was homeless and schizophrenic.
No.
Oh, it's if anybody can YouTube it or Google it, it's the most horrendous story. He was just in his 30s. He was a beautiful young man, and he was homeless and schizophrenic. And I understand his father was a former chief of police. Anyway, the cop that came on the scene had a problem with him being apparently homeless. And there's video of there. They literally beat him to death. It's a horrible story. And I've shed many tears over that story because he was just a good guy. He was just schizophrenic, and he was homeless. It was really sad.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't want us to come away with the idea that the majority of people who are struggling with housing cost burden or are living in their car or are doubling or tripling up. I mean, a lot of the homeless people that we're dealing with now are not. Are not the chronically homeless, are not the people who have these ongoing issues that require case management, but are people who literally have a mismatch between their income and the cost of housing in their community.
And I would be one of those, okay? You know, I actually fell into that category, but we're going to take a break right now. You're listening to Waking Up in America, very interesting conversation with Randy Shannon and good old Matthew here, giving us the lowdown on how things are. We want to thank Patricia and Paul Bragg and their Apple Cider Vinegar Company for sponsoring Waking Up in America. And you can always write and ask for the Walking on Water card, which is Patricia's family has a picture of Jesus Christ walking on water that's been passed down through seven generations. And so I always, when I send out coning orders and things like that, I tape one of these cards of Patricia's on the box, and I say, have a miracle today, because in one way or another, we can all walk on water in different ways when we set our hearts and our souls to actually doing that. We invite you to check out Kayani. We want you to check out these different projects and products. They're actually listed on our website at wakingupinamerica.com. And you just go down the right-hand side of the page and you follow the links. Kayani is a powerful medicine. It's actually the name Kayani means strong medicine, and I use it in the morning, and it's part of my vitality. This last week, I turned 76 years old, and I know I don't sound like that. So part of it is all the little practices that I put in over the years, and we're sharing those practices with you. Sir Jason Winter Tea, actually, the man created the tea to cure his own throat cancer. In the days that he created the tea, the alternative was they cut out people's tongues. So he didn't like that idea, so Sir Jason Winter got to be a Sir Jason by creating this tea, and he died not from cancer. He was actually died from medicine, somebody else's medicine in a hospital. So it's interesting how the world plays these things out. Protandim, I love this stuff. It's a blood purifier, and it fights inflammation, and Randy and I both like it because we dream great on it.
Purifying something up there.
it sure is, or wherever that is. Check out your sinus problems, your stiff neck, different things like that nature by going to theconingcompany.com. And what happens is that ear coning cleans the eustachian tubes, which is right below from your ear down to your collarbone. So it's important what happens with that. And there's the whole conversation. I've got a free paper over there that you can read. You can go to Randy Shannon, 42action.org. You can check that out and find out what she's up to. She's not only a beautiful blonde, she's a sassy, smart one, too, on top of it.
Aww.
Yes. You know. I say, what is it, 4 or 5 years now I've been meeting you from different angles and things?
Mm-hmm.
She's up to so many different things. She's bright and smart and sassy and up to it. So...
Thank you, Val.
And if you want some salsa to go along with this, Jim, I talked to Jim a couple of
times. Perfect timing.
good old Jim. He and his brother have El Pinto Restaurant, which is actually a destination restaurant in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque?
Yeah. What's really funny, when I first heard destination restaurant, I said, does that mean that people fly from different places in the world to go to that restaurant? And they said, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go there. It's
incredible.
Been there for like 50 years, so it's incredible, guys. Also, for those of you that love the galaxy and the galactic stars, the Galactic Federation has a once a month seminar, and the link to that's on the website, and you will find out totally interesting stuff about our galactic neighbors and friends and what they've been doing to help us, actually. We're getting help from all over the universe, and some of it you'll see and some of it you won't see, but a lot is going on in the invisible, and I wanted to just take this moment that the global currency reset is moving along. I understand that the top tiers have been aid in that. So far, we don't experience in this country. There are actually parts of the world that are experiencing the reset, so it's actually in action in the world, according to everything that I've been hearing. I don't see that it can go on much longer, but of course I said that in 2012. So I'm throwing an element of truth in there with that. Nonetheless, tracking this thing, when you have to align 208 countries to create a currency reset, and you have to turn all of those gears, and then you have to catch thieves at the same time, because the amounts of money that we're dealing with here are astronomical, okay? So just be of good cheer. Keep working on other issues, and we'll be announcing things here about what happened, and stay in the game, and for those of you that have passed, just smile down, because the earth is changing and things are getting better. So, and Matthew Cardinale are part of the evidence of that, okay? And so are the Juan Gibby, who we had on last week. There's just
who is so great.
Every evil person there is in the world, there are 90 terrific people, okay? They're a small, small percentage that have worked in the invisible and have a lot of power. If you want alkaline restructured water, check with Brooke Peterson at 561-628-1845. And that's Kangen water or any number of water products. This woman works with this. She's an amazing human being, and I'm proud to have her as my friend. Check out my Happily 200 project at wakingupinamerica.com/200. The number 200/, and find out about this paradigm, this possibility of living to be 200 years old, because once you accept that as a possibility, you will actually change how you live your life, and your quality of life will go straight up, okay? So take it on. We want to remind you that next September 3rd, actually, I think is the date, Randy.
Okay.
Our first Saturday show an hour later.
Yes.
So we want you to know we didn't disappear from the air at 6. We just decided to go stay in bed an hour longer, and we've invited you to enjoy some extra snoozing over at your house if you want to. So we're on air with Matthew Cardinale, Randy Shannon,
and Valerie
go back
Kirkgaard.
To them. Yeah, Valerie Kirkgaard, too. And she's going to go to drvalerie.com and check out what I've got over there, okay? And that's drvalerie.com. I'll give you a complimentary demonstration of the directed breath process. And I can make traumas in your life, I can help you neutralize them over the telephone. And if you want, the single session is my gift to you as listeners, okay? So you call 310-455-8623, but you go over to the website first, and you actually make an appointment, okay? So back to our fabulous team over here. Matthew, I know you wanted to make sure that certain things were covered, right? You wanted to talk about affordable housing. Fair enough, Matthew, fair enough. You've been good. You've given us all that we asked of you. I'm looking at you. You're 30? What? How old are you, old man? Are you like 31 or 32 now?
Oh, I'm 35.
Oh, my God. 35.
Over the hill.
Oh, my God. So basically, you've been active for 21 years.
Yeah, yeah, 20 years of advocacy experience, and you know, I think we glossed over many of those years, but you know, I went on after being a homeless teenager to college, and then graduate school. And
where did you stay when you were homeless?
Oh, well, let's see. So this was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in the mid to late 90s.
Okay. Yeah, what was that was a wild time.
Yeah, but, you know, I was still going to high school every day, or almost every day, and I was working, and I was, you know, I was really just like, you know, I'm going to have a normal life. I'm just going to be homeless, and it was kind of bizarre, actually. I mean, but a lot of the time I spent at a shelter called Covenant House, which many people may have heard of Covenant House because they're all over the country, all over the world, in fact. And but that was not always possible, so I had to alternate that with staying at friends' houses and sometimes on the streets. And then when I was 16, I actually was legally emancipated, became an adult, so I could make all my adult decisions, and that enabled me to get a lease. So at the age of 16, I had my own apartment, and I was in...
Good job, very independent.
Well, go, man, you go!
Right, okay. Right. I mean, so you see that, you see the roots of Smart Aleck.
Yeah, I do, I totally do. Yeah, I totally do.
You know, and it's like once I had been through all that, it's like, you know, like I'm supposed to be scared of some corporate attorney sending me a cease and desist letter. I mean, please, I divorced my parents. God, you know, but,
I love
yeah.
The twist on words, too, Aleck and Smart Aleck.
I know, I love it, too. I love the fact that they're arguing against you ruining their good name. That gets me going even more.
Their good name, yeah. So right. While I was in... You know, while we were in New Orleans working on the model legislation, I got this email from the corporate attorneys from Aleck insisting that we cease and desist from having the name Smart Aleck. And so if you go to smartaleck.org, you'll see our logo, our and then, of course, it's an acronym. So Smart Aleck, the SMART, is for State and Municipal Action for Results Today. And our ALEC stands for Agenda for Legislative Empowerment and Collaboration. So clearly it's different. Clearly we're different in every way. You know, we're actually progressive. We're actually transparent. We actually include low-income people. I don't really think anyone would, like, hear me on your show today and think that I was ALEC. So I don't think it's a legitimate, like, consumer confusion issue. And then they said that we were harming their good name. And so...
And that's the
you know,
she couldn't stop laughing, right?
She can't stop laughing at the good name, and she's not the only one, because people are asking, and I think this would really, it would be an issue of discovery that we would have to develop the factual record and ask the jury to determine what good name they have, if any. And, you know, we would really want to interview the Republicans, the corporations who think highly of Aleck, and we want to know how those opinions were developed.
So, so of course, have you sent the attorney a thank you note yet?
We actually sent
who?
Some flowers. No, we sent some flowers.
Is that the
See,
picture that's
you.
On the website?
I know how your mind works. This is great.
Yeah, they gave us we had a 2-week deadline to cease and desist. So on the date that we were supposed to cease and desist, Dr. Farmer, who lives in Baltimore, drove to D.C. And we delivered a bouquet of yellow roses, and the card said, "Thank you for acknowledging us," signed the Smart Aleck.
Wow, that's great.
And we haven't heard anything. It's been like 6 weeks now.
Are you tweeting?
You know,
are you tweeting?
We actually are not tweeting, but we are on Facebook. We have a strong presence on Facebook.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to start tweeting, okay? And Ron Hayes, it's all your fault that you got me talking like this. Ron worked on me years ago, And
this is terrible.
Let me tell you why you want to.
I've got a 71-year-old woman telling me I need to tweet. This is really something. Go ahead.
That's
good.
Okay. So you've got a 76-year-old woman, a Leo Iron Dragon, by the way, telling you, because what I've discovered on Twitter, and I don't even know if Rod realized this, but some of my followers have like 57,000 followers.
Right.
60,000, stuff
crazy.
Like that. And it would be, I would have just loved to have you tweet, we just gave, you know, Alec a dozen red roses, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
To keep people in, so that people can get in the game themselves, see? Because you're talking from wherever you're talking from right now, but when you start tweeting, then you're going to get friends. You had no idea. We have Chuck Norris following us. We have Leo Wanta. Do you know who Leo Wanta is?
Mm-mm.
This gentleman got together with President Reagan, and that's why the Berlin Wall came down. They gave Gorbachev
$10
billion.
You're missing out on Twitter and tweets and being a tweeter.
Okay. But our Facebook, for the record, our Facebook is Smart Alec, and it's facebook.com/state.municipal.action.
There you go.
And you can find a Smart Alec on Facebook.
Twitter thing the next time he comes on.
That's all right. We must. We will have a Twitter, and we have a GoFundMe. Of course, we're trying to raise $100,000, get affordable housing impact statements adopted in 10 U.S. cities and counties by 2018, and we are.
Do you know about the Grantsmanship Center?
Which one?
Do you know about the Grantsmanship Center?
The Grantsmanship?
Yeah, you need to know about the Grantsmanship Center in Los Angeles. Check them out. Because what I discovered when I did grant writing years ago was that there's a lot of one-page grants. And I think you'd be qualifying for a bunch of things on different levels. First of all, you know how to laugh, which is very helpful. Mm. Second of all, you're loaded with facts. And third, you're a force to be reckoned with, clearly. And you're a damn smart aleck.
Okay. I appreciate that. No. I like the idea of one-page grants. We've been researching some grants that are much more complicated than that. So
what happens when you go into the Grantsmanship Library? I haven't been down there, actually. We were talking about the library last night because Lita Albuquerque is a friend of mine who's a very well-known artist, and her work is environmental. And you mentioned somewhere in the environment and the rebirth of a nation's democracy. Well,
yes, that's our other big issue.
Yeah. The other thing that lead us up to is in using, you know, art to introduce people to the power of the environment. So there are people with, and there's that global currency reset thing that I was mentioning. I don't know whether you know about that or not, but that's actually going to change hundreds of thousands of lives on the face of the planet because the currency is being reset and the administration, the Bush administration, and a number of other forces actually depressed, for example, Iraq's currency, okay, from $3.22 to about a thousandth of a penny. And they set these things up so that they could later cash in on them, and this is the time that that's going to happen. So you're going to have economic support that hasn't been available. There's a lot of people that would like what all of us are doing, Matthew, but they just honestly... they barely have enough money to pay off the next bill. When you were talking earlier about people living in their cars, I lived in my car. I actually lived in my car, and it made my back go out, and I saved up enough money to go to the chiropractor. And the chiropractor took pity on me and gave me her house in Hollywood to live in because she was staying with her boyfriend. And I stayed there for about a month, and I'm like you. You drop me off somewhere. I'll start putting things together, you know, making things happen. So then I lived in my office, because, of course, you have to have an office if you're being a hotshot therapist. And I had my clothes behind the couch, and I was taking my showers at the... I had just joined the athletic club before my finances went out totally, so I washed at the athletic club.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You do what you have to do. And one of the leaders of Los Angeles who worked with Mayor Bradley, he actually came out of the Navy with the money to get an apartment and all that stuff. And he was rolled in, his money was stolen. and he actually lived in a box in an alley in downtown Los Angeles and started sweeping up for people and things like that, and he ended up being the mayor's right-hand person and had created a lot of projects here in Los Angeles. And, you know, just remarkable stories of what people have constructed for themselves. And the intention that he had when 8, 9, and 10 years old, it's like we don't realize how many people like this are in the world. And what you're pointing to, what people see is the schizophrenics and things like that. They don't see the people silently suffering or sharing a room with 7 other people or shopping at the 99-cent store or whatever it is. So this affordable housing, I get it. I want you to know that. I know it's not just schizophrenics and things of that nature.
Right. And we're trying to get people to understand that housing, affordable housing, is a public policy issue and not a private market issue or a personal struggle, but it's a collective issue, and the amount of affordable housing that exists is really a public policy choice. So the affordable housing impact statements are about making sure that anytime a government, whether a city our county, makes a decision that has an impact on our affordable housing stock, that there be prepared an impact statement that specifies how many units would be added or subtracted at the different income levels. And that sounds kind of simple. It is simple and technical, but what's really happening in cities across the country is that the existing affordable housing stock is dwindling and, you know, even disappearing, and the production of new housing is either market rate or, you know, there are millions of dollars being spent on so-called affordable housing. Sometimes the units aren't really what we would consider affordable, or if they are, there's no amount of money in the world that's going to solve the problem. So we have to be... Go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious, like, with the last election for president, Which ones that were running would have been more for this? There was Ron Paul, there was Obama, there was Mitt Romney, and then do this one. I know that's at a much higher level than the local level, but which one would have been more in your camp?
You know, going with the current people that we have, I would probably say like a Jill Stein of the Green Party, because you know, one thing that we need is a public investment in housing, and that needs to happen at all levels, and so that's, you know, certainly something that you know, the Green Party is about. I think that Hillary will do some things. There are things that can be done at the federal level, but certainly Gary Johnson is probably. I mean, he could probably be a lobbyist for ALEC, because that's, you know, the libertarian perspective, which is no regulation. And I want to talk about that for a second, because we had a dispute with the Home Builders Association of Greater New Orleans. And the Home Builders Association of Greater New Orleans opposed our legislation. Obviously, the city planning commission agreed with advocates and agreed with us. But they were saying any impact statement, which is a form of regulation which has some cost. And they're saying, the cost of complying with this, we're going to have to pass along to our renters, and that's going to cause the cost of housing to go up. And we were like, well, no, we have to address that. So we issued written comments that were included in the report. And, you know, I'm just so tired of this free market argument coming from home builders and property owners, when we know they will increase the rent as much as they believe they can, as much as they believe the so-called market will allow, and it has no relationship to the cost of the providing the housing unit. It's not like, you know, I mean, and I was actually reading in Paris just did like a rent control, and they actually are getting a good handle on keeping their rents from going up in Paris, and they require some relationship between, okay, property owner, you've got your taxes, you've got your upkeep, you've got you know, some profit margin, that's okay. And you add that up, and that's how much you can charge. That's not what we have in this country, for the most part. And, you know, I think there actually is a lot of support for rent control, especially in big cities like Seattle and Portland and throughout California. They've been doing rent control, too. You know, but I think it's very disingenuous when the libertarians say, somehow, if we have, like, low taxes and no regulation, magically everyone's going to have affordable housing because the builders can build what they want, and somehow supply is going to solve all of our issues. When what we see is all the new stuff that's getting built is market rate. Like, supply is not helping, and if all they're going to do is charge as much as they possibly can, like, stop complaining about costs, because the costs have nothing to do with what you're charging. So think about that.
Well, I saw that you did an interview with a libertarian radio host. Don't know what it
yeah.
was. What was the common ground? The headline says you guys found common ground. What was it?
Oh, now that was really interesting. He kept me on my toes.
Mm-hmm.
The common ground was actually around kind of the tiny houses movement. And
oh, yeah.
kind of this movement towards getting off the grid. And, you know, to me, you know, the more that you can do environmentally sustainable things and integrate that into affordable housing, I mean, that's wonderful. So we were thinking maybe there could be a some kind of model zone, zoning scheme, and we could call it like a self-sufficiency zone. If you want to live in a tiny house, go ahead.
We're trying to figure this out in our area now. We've had rent control in Santa Monica for years.
Right.
Well, it is and it isn't, because part of the thing is it really hasn't. The owners really can't take care of the properties. Some of the, you know, rents in uncontrolled properties, you know, where the they've been recently built and then people move in, are like five times what the place next door to them is, because their rent's been controlled for 20 years. I get the advantage of it, but what's happening is that with the prices, they haven't done anything about prices going up or anything of that nature. So you literally, let me just finish. Our post office, the contract was signed years ago. You know what they pay for the post office grounds? And the guy actually has to keep the air conditioning and stuff up, $900 a year. And then the
wow.
air went out, and the guy had to cough up $5,000, and he's making $900 a year off the rental of the property to the post office.
Yeah,
so
Val,
you got to watch this stuff. It's happening, you know, it's happening in different ways. Yes, certain things are good, but at the same time, they have to be intelligently applied.
Of course.
See, I'm on the other side of this, Matthew. I'm a homeowner that rents out, and so I'm pretty much locked into where I have to be with my pricing, but yet the county keeps going up, the city goes mm-hmm. up, the state goes up, mm-hmm. all these things I get hit with, and I'm still pretty much, I got to stay at the same price, so my margin is smaller. I'm more independent and capitalist. I mean, if I'm the one out there taking all the risk, and I still get hammered. I'm still stuck. The laws are more in favor of the people who are renting, not necessarily in the favor of the owner. It takes an arm and a leg. Like, a guy decides to move in and not pay me rent after 30 days, it takes me 30, 60, 90 days to get him out. So I'm more Ron Paul. I like Donald Trump. I know those are things that probably...
And which state is that where it's taking 30, 60, 90 days? That's certainly not...
Both. There's, I mean, you know, there's a process when they're telling you, oh, I'll pay, I'll give me till the 15th. So now I've wasted 15 days. Then you got to go, you have to file with the sheriff. Then they have to get served. Then there's the eviction. Then there's all their crap. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You know what I'm saying?
I was wondering what state?
I have in Florida and Iowa, both.
Florida and Iowa, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because the tenant-landlord laws vary state by state, And,
yeah.
You know, in some, the evictions can happen very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not always the case. But, you know, one of the things that I think will be demonstrated as more cities use the impact statements and look at the impact of what they're doing is I totally agree that we need to provide strategic relief to property owners so that they can, you know, keep up with their property taxes, especially low-income seniors. You know, I definitely, you know, want to do more to, you know, through like a housing trust fund where there's money for rehabilitation, because there's no reason that, you know, a senior should be losing their home to foreclosure or selling their home when they wouldn't otherwise do it because they can't keep up with, you know, an upkeep issue, and then it becomes a code enforcement issue. And so to the extent that there are people like you who are struggling to, you know, do the appropriate upkeep based on the rents that you're getting, I think there should be relief. I mean, if you're providing truly affordable housing on the market, then there should be relief to help you, you know, keep that going. The trend has been, frankly, you know, investment, equity firms, hedge funds, there's something called blacks. You know, actually, it's like investors from all over the world are buying up property in our big cities. And then we have these private management companies whose only motive is profit.
If you wanted to buy Detroit, who would you go to?
I don't know, probably Berkshire Hathaway or something. I don't know. You know,
maybe what we need to do is buy a Bottle City, Matthew. Buy a Bottle City. And Detroit ought to be going cheap.
No, that's actually a good idea. You know, just buy it and then just, you know, make it all affordable.
Well, there's a city that I have driven past, a little city. It's called Harmony, California. And Harmony, California has been bought and sold a number of times. So one of my secret plans was to buy Harmony and then create the ideal city there. But actually, I think it would be kind of, you know, my plans have grown, perhaps Detroit or some other city that's just been left to ruin. By the, you know, it's kind of like, it was really funny. This week I discovered why not to use Miracle-Gro. I've been a great user of Miracle-Gro over the years because it makes the plants
what
look terrific.
What did that do to our bodies?
Okay.
Yes.
And I asked, so could anything in Miracle-Gro actually be harming my body? And said, mm-hmm. Not so much. She said, what Miracle-Gro does is destroys the soil.
And oh,
wow.
Oh, my God. You know, and it's like what's happening is we're seeing the evidence of the soil or the soul of different countries and nations and cities and communities being destroyed. And we see the results. We see the dead city afterwards or the, you know, the violence afterwards or whatever we see. But it's like, what are we sprinkling on our ground? And so I chucked out my Miracle-Gro yesterday. And it's not happening here anymore. Because my argument was, if it's done on fruits and vegetables and it makes it grow so great, why not? Okay, well, I'll tell you why not, because it destroys the soil. So
I always figured if it's making those things grow extra big, then maybe it's doing it to the people once they eat it.
Turns out that it has, like, hydrogen or... I don't remember what the one is. But it, oh, gosh, it's time to sign off. So
wow.
Here we are, right in the middle of a hot conversation. I guess we're going to have Matthew back sometime soon. You are listening to Waking Up in America. This program has been brought to you by Kirkgaard Intergalactic Media, our radio partners, CloningCompany.com, Dr. James Murphy, John Denver, Tiffy Hedren, Carol Channing, Deepak Chopra, Ed Astor, Dennis Weaver, Larry Hagman, and Esther Williams, Admiral Eugene, Carol Jane Goodall, and Jonathan Granoff, Dennis Kucinich, Terry Cole Whitaker, descendant of King David, 42action.org, Edward F. Group III, and DrValerie.com and Dr. Paul spelled out. Thanks to Paul Sebrag for leaving us your daughter, Patricia, to continue your work. A big thanks to our team at Voice America, Jeff Spinard, our producer, Ryan Treasure, and Randy Jackman, our friends at Cumulus Radio, Mike Vitale, Mary Flynn, Ron Simon, and our research director, Ron Hayes.
to John Young and Tony Gospel. Big thanks to all for all the airtime. Big thanks to our webmaster, Esther Warda. Merci beaucoup to Bent Muggin for our theme music. Almost Ordinary People. Be kind to somebody today, and make sure you do a good deed. And if we all do it, everything works.
And you're not crazy anymore.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for all you new, poor and through. Now your heart is open.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.